You're listening to a UC San Diego podcast.
Okay. Can everyone hear me back there? Is the microphone working okay? Yes? Can you hear me at the back? No? Is that on? Okay, does it work though? A little bit? I could be a bit louder. I could not be that much louder. Is that okay? All right. So it looks like everyone's approximately settled. Sorry for the wait list. How many of you are waitlisted here, by the way? Okay, well, we'll see what we can do about that. Things usually clear up a little bit while people are shopping around for classes, but this is the biggest room we could find, and obviously it's still kind of full. In the meantime, I do also teach an undergraduate class directly before this. You probably can't enroll in it, but you could show up to the lecture while the class is this full. But after sort of mid-next week, I expect things will have cleared up one way or the other, all right? So until then, just bear with the slightly undesirable seating situation, and we'll see how things progress in the next few days. Okay, so welcome to CSE 255. So essentially, this course is about trying to understand data to gain insights and make predictions. So these are three very high-level, very fluffy concepts. What do they actually mean? Well, understanding data really means modeling it. So trying to understand what's going on, making predictions really means solving real-world applications. If we have a good model of some data, say, how do people form friendships with each other? How do people evaluate movies? What advertisements does a person like to click on? If we have a good model for that, then we can make predictions. We can build real-world applications that say, okay, what movie should I recommend next? How can I recommend friends to people on Facebook? How can I suggest which ad should be surfaced in order to maximize revenue of some website? Something like that. That's one thing we want to do. The other thing we want to do is gain insights. So gaining insights is what I guess you'd call the actual science of data mining. We don't just want to have a model that works well for some predictive task. We really like to know why it works well. What are the underlying forces at play? So if we have some task like predicting friendships on a social network, maybe we'd like to understand, okay, what are the social forces, what are the social communities that drive people to become friends with each other or something like that? And then we can really make not just a statement about an application, but we can also make some scientific statement as well. That's what we're really here for, isn't it? So, some examples of the kinds of things we could do with data mining. First, which is probably my favorite, which is actually the research area I work in, is something like a recommender system. So we might like to estimate what star rating is a certain person going to give to a particular product, like a movie, such as Pitch Black. So, everyone here has seen Pitch Black? Yeah. It's maybe not like a critically acclaimed movie, but to me, it's a very precious movie, you know? So what is it about me? What is it about Pitch Black that makes that movie and me somehow compatible, all right? If we can model that, we can solve a predictive task. We can build a real application like a recommender system. This is essentially how something like the Netflix recommender works, okay? You want to build a model that says what makes certain people compatible with certain movies, where compatible with just means they're going to give it a high rating, okay? If you can do that, you can suggest to the movies that they're likely to give a high rating to, and that's going to, I don't know, increase revenue or something. On the other hand, we want to gain insights. We want to be able to interpret what's actually happening in our model and say things like, okay, well, what are the properties of the user? What are the properties of the item that make them compatible? Is it to do with special effects? Is it to do with the quality of the acting, cinematography? And also things like, all right, why is it that people tend to give high ratings to blockbusters during the summer or something like that. So what are the temporal factors involved? How do things like gender, age, and location, things like demographic factors, how do those influence the way people rate things? Another application, something like the people you may know feature on Facebook, okay? So here the prediction task is to say take two users, say myself and some potential friend, and you'd like to predict, will I become friends with that person? What are the features that make me likely to become friends with that person? So then the application you'd like to build is to suggest something like a ranked list of potential friends, where the ones near the top of the list are those that I am most likely to form a friendship with. So this is the current real recommendation that I see on my Facebook. Their top link is my former academic advisor, not someone I'm going to friend. So, you know, there's still a lot of room for improvement with this type of model. And also, if we can solve this predictive task better, then we might gain some interesting insights. Really, this predictive task and this modeling task is about why do people form friendships with each other. A high fidelity model of that is going to lead to good predictive performance, but it's also going to tell us, okay, how do things like communities or, you know, social communities impact people's probability of being friends with each other? Do people tend to form close bonds with people they went to school with or worked at the same job with or people from the same hometown or something like that? So we maybe can understand the different sociological factors that drive people to become friends if we can develop a high fidelity model for this predictive task. Another one, a very obvious one that people actually seem to be quite attracted to is, can you predict whether a person is going to click on a particular advertisement? If you can do this, I guess the application is pretty obvious. You'd like to surface advertisements that, given some particular query they typed in, is going to surface some advertisements that are most likely to be clicked on or they're most likely to convert or something like that. So really, we'd like to learn this relationship between a query and an advertisement such that we maximize sort of the relevance of the ad to the query, or we maximize the probability of the ad being clicked on. Again, we still gain some kind of insights from doing this, like what products tend to be purchased together or what makes certain products compatible. People tend to have different purchasing patterns at different times of year and so on and so forth. So we can sort of understand the market forces at play behind this kind of predictive task. If online advertising is not so much your thing, if there are, of course, all kinds of other applications. Most of what I work on is web applications, so that's mostly what you'll see in this class. But, of course, the same type of models can be used whenever we have like labeled data and some sort of predictive task we want to solve. Another classical one would be something like, can we make a prediction about what symptom a person is going to exhibit next time they visit the doctor? So the application of this, again, it's a fairly important one. If you can predict the next symptom, then maybe you can recommend some course of preventative treatment or something like that. And more than that, you can actually understand sort of how the disease works. So you can say, well, if I can predict the next symptom, I must have some good model of how the disease progresses. I should have some good model of how people's demographic information or comorbidity impacts their probability of exhibiting a symptom on the next hospital visit, something like that. So by using a lot of data to solve the predictive task as accurately as possible, we can do something that's not only worthwhile, but we can kind of understand what's going on, how does the disease actually work. All right, so those are the kind of applications we'll look at in this class, mostly web ones, because that's mostly the kind of data we have and the data I tend to work with. Really, though, if we want to do data mining, what do all of these have in common? So what are the sort of common ingredients that we need in order to address all of these kinds of application areas? One, we need something like labeled data, and we need some meaningful outcome to be associated with each data point. All right, so the example I presented, something like, who liked this movie or will I give a high rating to this movie, has a pretty meaningful outcome associated with it. I can say, yes, it's labeled as a rating. I can use data like this, and from this I can extract a meaningful outcome given a new movie. Did I like it? Yes or no? It's very measurable, just a number between 1 and 5. On the other hand, the kind of thing we sort of can't do with data mining techniques is something like this. So this would be a very fun problem to work on. We won't do it in this class. Could we understand what makes a review sarcastic? All right? I don't know. Seems like a pretty simple problem. Seems very similar to the first problem. What's the difference? Well, for this, we don't have any labels. All right? So maybe if someone were to go on Amazon, sit down, hand label every single review as sarcastic or not sarcastic, we could do this. But otherwise, it's very difficult. We can't really... We can build a model of what a sarcastic review is, but we don't really have any way of measuring whether the model actually works or not, right? Whereas for something like a star rating, we easily do. We can easily say, did I predict it correctly? So more on that, we really need something like a clear objective to optimize. In other words, we need to have some way of knowing we modeled the data well, some way of knowing our model actually succeeded. And more than that, we should be able to take actions based on this model. So an action, for example, in a recommender system would be, if I can predict a person's ratings very accurately, then what I might do is just say, all right, here's the thing you would rate the most highly. I'm going to recommend that to you. If I can estimate whether you'll click on an ad, the action would be surface the one you have the highest probability of clicking on. But really, the point of this is that we can then do things like compare one model to another. We can really measure how well did the model work, and out of two models or out of a whole suite of models with different parameters, we can say which of them works, which of them doesn't, and we can then select between them. So in the case of something like a movie recommender system, our kind of measurable outcome or the objective we're optimizing might look something like this. We're given some big data set of every rating that every user has given to every movie ever. We withhold some of that data to test our model, and then we say, all right, here are the real ratings, and here's the predictions for the user and the item that our model made. And all we do is compare those to each other. So we square the differences, add those things up. That's called the sum of squared errors, believe it or not. That's a measure of how well our model worked. All right? That's an objective we can try to optimize. We can compute this value. We can say, given two different models, which of them has a smaller sum of squared errors. In fact, this is exactly what we're going to do in the first assignment in this class. I'm going to give you a bunch of user item pairs for some kind of predictive task, and I'm going to evaluate you by saying, all right, I know the true values. You just make the predictions and, you know, try and make them as accurately as possible. This is how I'm going to evaluate you. How can you build a model that does that well? Third thing is there actually enough data, and is the data we have useful? That's kind of the third problem, the third ingredient we need if we want to successfully do data mining. One part is measuring significance of our results. So we have two models, one of them seems to be better than another one. How can we really objectively evaluate whether it actually is better? Do we have enough data to do so? Second is actually, can we collect meaningful features that are likely to be associated with the outcome we care about predicting? If I want to predict movie ratings from movie reviews, okay, fine, that should work. If I want to predict political affiliation from movie reviews, maybe that's harder, okay? Maybe there's no relevant information in the review of a movie that says what my political affiliation is likely to be, so even though it's sort of a valid data mining task, we don't necessarily have the information that we'd need to solve this. In other words, the features are not kind of useful or relevant. Okay, so that's what data mining is. In this course, I essentially aim to teach how you can model data in order to make these types of predictions, in order to solve these sort of real applications. Secondly, I talk a lot about how you can sort of test and validate models. So if you have a whole suite of different models, a whole suite of different parameters, you'd like to choose the best model amongst alternatives and ensure that your results are statistically significant. That's another big component of the course. And the third is, I guess, what I would call the sort of basic science aspect, is that we want to reason about our findings. We want to say, what are the social forces or the market forces, or how does the disease progress, or, you know, what's really actually going on? How can we tune one of these models with machine learning and say, what is the model actually doing? or, you know, what are the people actually doing who we're trying to model? So in terms of what you should know in this course, I think it should all be pretty straightforward stuff for a graduate level class. One is just you should be able to do basic data processing like manipulating texts, counting instances of words in a string, removing punctuation, whatever, nothing too frightening. You should know basic graph theory, adjacency matrices, edge lists, whatever. Nothing too fancy here. You should be able to work with formatted data. I think the way wait lists are constructed means that almost everyone here is a CSE student, right? So CSV files should... It's almost CSE, right? I mean, shouldn't be too scary. You know, of course, if you don't know this stuff, it's not the toughest of stuff, but I'm just going to assume fluency in all of these things as I go through the class. If you don't know any of these things, it's something you want to catch up on. Also, basic maths. Again, for a graduate level class, it really should be pretty basic. There's a little bit of linear algebra. An equation like this should not be too frightening to anyone. I will go through it slowly later. An equation like this should also not be frightening. This is what's called linear algebra. This is what's called calculus. So, you know, if you want to optimize this function with respect to x, your computer's derivative, you set it to zero. Nothing too shocking there. And yeah, we want to know some basic statistics and probability. Is everything okay? That's going to be impossible. That's okay. All right, so... we want to have some basic knowledge of statistics, probabilities, and so on and so forth. Again, if you don't know, this is not the end of the world. As I'm going to explain in a minute, this course is perhaps more about doing things and actually building things than it really is about knowing things compared to some of the other machine learning courses at UCSD. But in the lectures, I'm going to, you know, derive a lot of this material. I'm going to sort of give the background that you need to properly understand it. So fluency in these kind of ideas is going to help you a lot to really understand what's going on. So I'm not necessarily going to expect people to be able to reproduce the derivations for themselves, but I think you'll get a lot more value out of the class if you at least can follow the high-level intuition behind them. All right, so in terms of coding, I'm going to do everything in Python. How many people here know Python? Bordering on most, I guess. So I use a lot of Python, and I make pretty heavy use of a bunch of Python libraries. I don't test or evaluate anything that actually involves looking at people's code, really. So I have previously said, you know, you can use any language you want. We're just going to evaluate you based on the outputs you generate, whether your algorithm actually works or not, more so than what your code actually looks like, all right? I retract that statement, though. Just learn Python. So in the past, it's been sort of very problematic when we kind of make heavy use of libraries and so forth, and people can't quite find the equivalent of some library in a different language. And, you know, in the kind of code I present in class, I use all kinds of nasty, nasty list comprehensions, things like that. So it's going to make life a lot easier if you can kind of follow that material easily. In terms of what else there is at UCSD, along the lines of machine learning, the other most comparable classes to this would be 250A and 250B, so that's probabilistic reason and decision making and just machine learning. There's also, I think, a 250C. Does that exist yet? There will be a 250C one. I think it's called something really frightening like machine learning theory. So this class is not that. It's on the other end. Like I sort of said a minute ago, if anything, this class is more about building things and doing things than it is about knowing things. These classes are more about knowing things. Obviously, you have to know things to build things, all right? So there's some knowing things here too. But really, the main differentiating factor is this class is just more, I guess, hands-on. We're really interested in working with real, large-scale data sets, applying machine learning to some you know, real predictive tasks, some interesting applications, working with some interesting data, as opposed to 250A and B, which are more about a rigorous understanding of the mathematical concepts. And that being said, in the lectures. I will try and derive everything. I will try and give a lot more background. But in terms of evaluation, it's much more about actually building things. Okay. The other thing that's maybe worth mentioning is I'm also teaching. This is an undergraduate class, so I don't know if that helps anyone on the wait list. There's maybe 10 spots open there, but I don't think they're really available. But if you're finding the materials going too quickly, which I hope you're not, then you know you could also watch the undergraduate class, which goes through things a little bit more slowly. If you don't like sitting in the stairwell, you could also shop to the undergraduate class. There are a few seats. Or if you just want to take this class at 5 p.m., that's fine too. Of course, you've got to do the 255 assessments and everything, but that lecture's right before this one in case you're curious to attend that. Okay, so what's the point of lectures in this class? Well, like I said, I like to cover a lot of motivation and derivations and background material, you know, write down some maths, partly to satisfy myself, but partly because I think it's valuable. But that being said, it's not really what's getting evaluated in this class, right? I think it's well worth doing in the lectures, and if you try and stay on top of the material, then watching the derivation and motivations will really, I think, clarify a lot of things in your head and seem very valuable. Also in the class, I cover the basic material, which is obviously pretty important, even if the derivations don't interest you that much. Other than that, I mean, I'll look at code examples, you know, difficult homework, exam prep. Probably not. This is a graduate class, so yeah, we don't need that. And anything else you want to talk about. So interrupt me as often as you like. I would much rather talk about anything than my own slides. So I'll be delighted for the interruption. Speaking of which, I mean, that's about all for logistics before I move on to the course outline. So if there's any logistical issues other than the wait list, let me know now. Okay, that I'll get to in the next section. So maybe I should just continue. All right. So course web page is here. This is where all the homework and assignments are going to be. Nothing too shocking about that. I sent it out on Piazza. All of you should have been invited, including those of you who are not in the class yet. If you're curious, this is last year's course web page. And I'll put the slides online too, so you can find this. Not that it's too hidden. This quarter, the content's going to be roughly similar. Last time I ran this as a graduate course, there was no exam. This time there'll be a midterm. There's no final, but there is a midterm. I don't really like midterms, but I've got to go to a wedding this year. I don't really like weddings either. But kind of the thing is, I won't be here, so it's a good chance to run a midterm. It'll basically be on sort of all of the basic background material. Okay. But I'll get to that in a minute. Anyway, the course outline is sort of roughly split into two parts. In the first half, we're going to look at basic background material. In the second half, we're going to look at applications. So for the next few weeks, we'll look at regression, classification, unsupervised learning, and graphical models. These are kind of all the techniques you need to have a rough handle on before we can look at any of the interesting stuff, so before we can get onto the applications. Now, those of you who've taken previous machine learning courses here, I think you'll find most of this stuff to be real easy. The rest of you might find that stuff to be, you know, a little hard, but hopefully not too much. So you have a bit of catching up to do, and that's why I'm teaching it. But by the time we get to week four or week five, I think everything should be new for everyone by then, okay? So everyone should be on more or less equal footing. And this, I think, is really the fun stuff. So this is where we actually get to work on some real-world applications. Until then, we're just setting up what we need to know to do so. Okay, so quick sort of 15-minute outline. In the first week, we're going to look at linear regression, least squares, this concept of overfitting, gradient descent, training, validation, testing, model selection. Essentially, we want to build models where we use features to predict real-valued outputs. Okay, that's all regression is. So the kind of example we'll work with is things like, can we estimate how a person's going to rate a beer or some other product using demographic information about the user or some sort of properties about the item? Can we sort of assign weights to those things that say, how is this person going to rate this item? We'll talk about this idea of overfitting, which is one that allows us to penalize the complexity of a model, essentially, to stop us from building a model that seems to work well but is so complex that when we apply it to new data, it stops working at all. And secondly, we'll do a bit more nice math, some derivations, some background material. We'll explain sort of why do people use measures like the mean squared error? Why is the sort of sum of squared errors a good thing to optimize versus something like the sum of absolute errors? It's a nice probabilistic interpretation for this idea. We'll kind of derive the motivation behind why people do that. Okay, so hopefully, I guess this is all basic stuff if you've done other machine learning classes here. Classification, very similar to regression. We'll look at logistic regression, SVMs, multi-label classification, and evaluating classifiers. So really, this is the same thing as we do this week, except we're working with a different kind of output variable. That's the only thing that really changes. Instead of trying to predict something like a real valued output, like a movie rating, we want to predict something like a binary or a categorical output. So given some input data like an image, can I say, what is the category of the object or objects in this image? Given something like a product and a user, rather than saying, what rating are they going to give to that product, we might want to predict something like, just will they purchase it, yes or no? Sort of, really, it's kind of the same problem, but the fact that the output variable is binary rather than real valued changes the type of model and the type of evaluation we should use. And, you know, same thing for something like we will click on an ad. So we'll look at this simple model called naive Bayes, and then we'll see how this can be improved with what's called logistic regression, which is sort of the equivalent of regression but adapted to binary variables. And third, we'll see support vector machines. So that's all next week. Third, dimensionality reduction. So this is now moving on to unsupervised learning. In the first 2 weeks, we see this basic idea of saying we have some features, we have some labels. Can we infer the underlying function that says how did we generate the labels from the features? In third week, we're going to look at not so much how can we predict a label, but how we can sort of find the underlying model that best explains the data. So dimensionality reduction is the most basic example of this. If we have some very, you know, high-dimensional data set, in this case, it's only two dimensions in the picture, but we'd like to say, oh, look, this data here, it, you know, approximately lies on a low-dimensional manifold. Another way of saying that is it's approximately a straight line. Right? So you can express this data almost if you just throw out one of the dimensions. And same with really complex types of data like images. What an image looks like can, roughly speaking, be explained by what color is it, how many horizontal edges, how many vertical edges, how many diagonal edges does it have, and whereas some other things show up much, much, much more rarely, and you can kind of just throw them out. If you want to extract meaningful information about what images look like, there's actually only a few dimensions that really explain what's going on. The rest don't matter. So you can think of this as kind of a technique for finding features that are going to work well. So if you want to solve some regression task where you have some impossibly high-dimensional data, how can you find meaningful features that are likely to explain the variance in that data? That's what dimensionality reduction is really about. It'll make a lot more sense in a couple of weeks. Other than dimensionality reduction, we look at community detection, which is kind of the equivalent of dimensionality reduction, but for graphs. Okay, so this is a social network. In fact, this is my Facebook friends. There's many, many of them, as you can see. And you might like to say, well, this is not really a random graph, is it? There's some common structure in this graph that explains most of its shape or its topology. Really, it's divided up into a few small communities, which more or less explain its behavior. So you can kind of summarize this graph, or you can reduce the dimensionality of this graph by saying it's approximately equal to these 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 communities, okay? So then you can kind of compress, or you can model what this network looks like in terms of the communities that are in the network, which is a very useful way of building features for a network, but also a useful way of analyzing around what sort of social dimensions do communities actually form. And we can also use this to do things like take a network of bloggers and we'd like to infer their political affiliations and split them up in terms of conservative versus progressive blogs or something like that, so we can find sort of adversarial components of a graph or something like that. Okay, so week four is graphical models. This is something I really like talking about, perhaps more than people like learning about it. So really this is sort of a generalization of the ideas from the first couple of weeks where we're treating each data point as being independent. We want to say, how are you going to rate a movie? 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 You can extend that, or you can generalize that and do a bit better if you say, well, people are not actually rating things independently. People tend to give similar ratings to their friends. And in something like the previous example with identifying political affiliation on blogs, that's particularly important because, you know, people tend to be tend to belong to social communities that share political affiliations, perhaps more than you can predict political affiliations from demographic information or features. Maybe the social network or the relationships between variables is actually explaining more of the data than the features themselves are. All right? And that's the kind of problem we need a graphical model to solve. Really what it is some probabilistic way of talking about the relationships between two variables. So given the value of one variable, how does that impact the probability of another variable taking a particular value? So I don't know if there's a particularly... Where do graphical models come up in other machine learning classes here? 250A. Okay, so you do see a bit of this? It's not too shocking? All right. I'll also talk about some algorithms that you can use to solve very large-scale, in this case, binary prediction tasks on massive graphs where you're simultaneously saying, I want to optimize some score that says, say, for this user, are their features consistent with being a progressive or a conservative blogger, but also are their labels consistent in the sense that they tend to have similar labels to their friends? So we can sort of trade off these two effects and solve very large-scale inference problems. So this was maybe the graphical models are something I think is very important, but it was probably what people looked at the least in terms of their open-ended assignments. People did a lot of regression and classification and dimensionality reduction. Not so many people wanted to cover graphical models. So this quarter I'll probably only spend maybe one class on graphical models. I'll cover the amount of material I need to cover so that everything in the application section makes sense. At the very least, I'll talk about things like graphical models for time series. So maybe not something as complicated as a social graph, but if we want to do something like time series prediction, we'd like to say, I don't know, I want to predict the weather. Well, Wednesday's weather is similar to Tuesday's weather, Thursday's weather is similar to Wednesday's weather, so on and so forth. So can we model?
This has been a UC San Diego podcast. For more, visit podcast.ucsd.edu.